Welcome to CRE Radio with Howard Klein, radio for and about the commercial real estate professional. Our focus is exploring issues facing landlords and tenants, property and asset managers, investors, brokers, lenders, and everyone in the industry. Our style is conversation over coffee with highly experienced commercial real estate professionals. Over 35 years, Howard's legal and commercial real estate practice has centered on broker, leasing, and property management issues. CRE Radio is presented with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our audience. Access our archive shows, upcoming schedule, and engaging articles at creradio.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes by searching for CRE Radio. And now, here's Howard Klein.
And welcome to CRE Radio. Today's show is Finding the Right Commercial Appraiser, Best Practices. And we've got some great guests with us. We've got Ray Sears, Chairman at Integra Realty Resources, Dan Boring, CEO at Lee & Associates Valuation and Consulting, and Paul Beiser, Principal at Value Research Group. If you'd like to contact us, you can contact us on the web at www.creradio.com/appraiser. You can tweet us live during the show at creradio.com. And if you'd like to ask a question or leave a comment during the show, you can call us at 949-393-6492. That's 949-393-6492. So why don't we get right into the show? Gentlemen, I'm going to introduce each of you and ask each of you to give a 30-second elevator speech. And if you try to go over, I'll cut you off. So, Ray, why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us who you are and who you're with, and basically what it is that you do.
Sure. My name's Ray Sears. I've been appraising for over 30 years. I'm the chairman of Integra Realty Resources. We're the largest commercial real estate valuation firm in the country. We have 66 offices throughout the country and one in the Caribbean. We do about 40,000 commercial appraisals each year. And we have 900 total people, 600 appraisers. Of the 600 appraisers, over 200 hold the MAI designation, which is the gold standard in our industry.
Great. And Dan, why don't you give us your 30-second elevator speech and let us know what you do.
Okay. My name is Daniel Boring, and I'm the CEO of Lee & Associates Valuation and Consulting Services. We're the appraisal arm for Lee & Associates, which is a national full-service commercial real estate firm. We have about 51 offices last count nationwide and growing and expanding both here in the U.S. and internationally.
Great. And thank you very much, Dan. Welcome to the show. Paul, last but not least, why don't you give us an idea of who you are and why you're on the show?
Yeah, I'm Paul Beiser, and I'm a partner in a regional appraisal firm located in northern New Jersey, and we do work in New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, and Pennsylvania. We're a little different in that we don't have a national reach like Dan and Ray, but we focus on local real estate issues and specialize in providing litigation support and expert testimony, in helping highway authorities make right-of-way acquisitions, and in providing market studies for various commercial property types. And finally, we do a fair amount of estate planning work. We focus, again, in a smaller geographic area, but we really get to know those markets really well, and including all of the municipalities and zoning impacts that may affect properties.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And wow to all three of you. It is not by any accident that I'm having the three of you on the show at this time, including Paul, who is regional, because there's value in associating with both national and regional firms. Are there different types of appraisal firms? And if so, are certain types of firms more qualified than others? Why don't we start out with Paul, since he was the last person that I introduced?
Sure. There are different kinds of firms. I think that's demonstrated today on today's show. National firms such as Ray and Dan's can provide a really good and interesting perspective to larger corporate clients in making real estate decisions on really based on geographic locales and what they can expect to pay and the cost of operations for their particular company in different markets. Firm like mine, we specialize more in the local real estate markets and really have a lot of insight into how various zoning boards function, how the markets function in specific geographic locations, and what drives supply and demand in the local marketplace. So our focus is really intense in the northern kind of metropolitan area, northern New Jersey and metropolitan area, and we try to establish relationships with city officials, town officials, and the local brokerage community.
Dan, what are the different types of appraisal firms? It's not just by region, is it?
No, it's not. The appraisal industry is about a $3 billion a year industry on the commercial side, of which the national players, most of them will start with letters named with C's, make up about 25% of the total market share. So 75% of the market is really the smaller boutique firms and the regional offices, the independent appraisers. And as Paul indicated, if you're appraising a large geographically dispersed portfolio, just from a mechanical sense, you've got fewer choices for just the larger national firms that can cover those types of companies. Also, you know, if you have a BP oil spill where you've got to put a lot of boots on the ground to do the site surveys and so forth, that tends to go to the larger national firms. Within those national firms, they also have specialty practice groups, and Ray probably can talk about some of his and other firms. And what we're seeing is there are some firms that are really focused in on litigations like Paul's. There are other firms that are have different specialties, either focusing in a regional area from a geographic standpoint or from a product type. And then we're starting to see some firms really going out into more holistic valuations beyond just real property, including things like valuing machinery and equipment, inventory, intellectual property, tangible assets, collateral reviews, that kind of thing. So it's a very mature industry. It's very dispersed, and there's no one entity that has an absolute large market share.
Well, Ray, what are your thoughts?
It's very similar to other service companies and other industries. Just like law firms have come in all different sizes, even brokerage firms. So brokerage firms, some do commercial, some do residential, some do both. Some brokerage firms will do other things such as property management, others won't. So appraising is not dissimilar to that, where it's pretty diverse as to all the different types of appraisal companies that there are.
Well, Dan, you had mentioned, what is it, MAI or MIA? No, MIA is missing in action. MAI appraisal.
MAI is the...
Could you just give us
member of the Appraisal Institute.
Yeah, what is that?
It's a professional designation put out by the Appraisal Institute, and it's a designation that's earned via years of experience and passing various exams, taking a number of classes. But it's just there are two designations put out by the Appraisal Institute. One is a SRA, which is more residential oriented, and then the MAI, which is commercial and residential. But it's a professional designation.
Okay. We'll be back shortly with more from our guests, Paul Beiser, Dan Boring, and Ray Sears, right here on CRE Radio.
CRE Radio is supported by Prospect Now. Locate building owner principals faster and smarter at prospectnow.com. By The Broker List. Find brokers, deals, services, and vendors free online at thebrokerlist.com. And by Techniques Marketing. Grow your key account revenues at techniquesmarketing.com.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
If you have questions or a point you would like to make during the live show, call in at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue to speak live with Howard and his guests. That's 619-393-6492 during the live show. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
And welcome back to CRE Radio. Today's topic is commercial appraisals. Our guests are Dan Boring from Lee & Associates Valuation and Consulting, Paul Beiser from Value Research Group, and Ray Sears from Integra Realty Resources. Well, Ray, since we left you as last on the last portion of the discussion, why don't we start with you at this point in time? Let's talk about relationships with brokers, since quite a lot of the appraiser's relationship is with the brokers. So what can a broker do or not do as it relates to advice on value?
Well, brokers provide broker opinions, which are very helpful for property owners, for lenders, asset managers. So, you know, it's a valuable service. But what I think what the brokerage community has to realize is that you got to be careful that it's not an appraisal. In order to provide an appraisal, you have to be licensed. And each state issues licenses for the appraiser. So the broker has to realize that you have to be licensed to provide an actual appraisal. And what kind of advice? What I would say is broker opinions are valuable for clients. I would suggest if they haven't done so that brokers take an appraisal course or two just to see if their skills, what they're providing to their clients, are meeting what the market demands.
Well, Paul, what is the difference between an appraisal and an opinion of value?
Well, there's a couple of things. The point of view or the perspective of whether it's a broker or an appraiser is different in that brokers are advocates for their clients, and they know the needs, the real estate needs of their clients, whether they're purchasing property or selling property, and they know very well the financial situation of their clients. Whereas appraisers, we provide unbiased opinions, and typically they'll wind up being much more detailed and involved in a typical broker price opinion, where we'll drill into the physical characteristics of a property and how it presents itself in the marketplace. We'll drill into zoning codes and how area bulk standards may affect apart properties' marketability. Appraisers will provide a very detailed analysis of a property, where brokers provide very valuable information, but it's more of a snapshot of what's going on in the market today based on listings and some recent sales.
As an attorney, I run into brokers all the time who kind of give legal advice to their clients. In some instances, they may be as qualified as some lawyers, but some people kind of stretch things a bit. They tell them what lease forms should be used, and they're so enamored with their knowledge that they imply or try to get the client to save some money by not hiring a lawyer. Do you run into that problem as it relates to appraisers, Dan?
Not really as much. I'm obviously embedded within a brokerage firm, and we work very collaboratively with our brokers. They don't really want to do the broker opinion of values from both a cost and a liability standpoint, so they refer a lot of that work on to us. At least within our firm, we really don't find a lot of bleed over between the two different entities. And we have a very strong Chinese wall between our organization and the brokerage group. But we try to be as collaborative as possible and basically work with them as far as trying to get as much street-level data as we possibly can to support our valuation analysis.
Dan, how can an appraiser add value to a broker?
Well, there's a number of ways. We work collaboratively, like I said, with them. We supply them with comp sale data that we've confirmed independently. Obviously, we don't share anything that is confidential. But as far as market data, we do a lot of sub work for them in regards to discounted cash flow analysis, Argus runs, doing forecasting, market studies, supply demand analysis for new construction. So we work quite closely with them. But, the last firm I was with, Tom Darcy was the CEO. It was Grubb & Ellis. And the two top brokerage firms out on the West Coast both had MAI appraisers embedded within their staffs. Now, they weren't MAIs that were in the appraisal division, but they were able to utilize their skill set while working on these teams and were very, very successful.
Ray, what's an Argus run?
Argus is a software program that allows you to do a discounted cash flow projection, and so it's pretty much an industry standard. So certain types of properties require, and certain clients require, that an Argus discounted cash flow be provided within the appraisal.
Well, Ray, while we were talking with you, why don't you give us an idea when someone should get an appraiser involved in a transaction?
In a transaction, we get a fair amount. Appraisers get a fair amount of referral work from brokers. Sometimes the appraiser can help with the marketing of a property. If there might be different expectations between, say, what a property owner thinks that his property is worth and what the broker thinks it's worth on the market, if there's a difference there and the broker's having a hard time to convince the property owner to accept a reasonable offer, they could always go out to a third-party appraiser and engage that appraiser to provide an opinion of value, which might help support something, hopefully something that's market-oriented, and might let the property owner see what the real value is rather than what in their own mind is the value of their property.
Well, who has a story? Anybody have an interesting story about this type of situation where the broker had difficulty convincing the owner of the property of the value of, and that the appraiser helped out? Paul, why don't we start with you?
Sure. Just recently we were engaged to assist in a transaction where a large national retail store was looking to purchase property in a particular area in New Jersey. And what we were able to bring to the table there was economic projections. We could discuss the trends in population growth, the trends in income growth and income patterns and household income that were moving into an area and where they were projected for the next 5, 10, and 15 years. That helped in making a decision on whether to purchase the property or not and what they could expect in terms of sales per square foot of floor area, which is really what drives the retail market. That kind of information is tough to come by. It requires analysis and a lot of number crunching, and it's got to be really convincing. But the point of it all is that it's a very data-driven process. And unless you have the time to really sit and sift through this data, cull through it, and find out what's important for your client and really what's important for the success of the property, you might miss the picture a little bit. So we work closely with brokers in providing that kind of supporting data for transactions.
Oh, let's pause briefly for a word from our sponsors. You're listening to CRE Radio. Stay with us, because when we come back, we're going to hear from Dan. And actually, we just heard from Dan. Or did we? I'm getting confused, guys.
No, that was Paul.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to hear from Dan and Ray, and I'm going to expect them to give us a funny story. So sweat it out, guys. We got about 2 minutes before I come back to you.
CRE Radio is supported by Monogram Magic. For the best in corporate apparel, visit logos2life.com. Buy Note Marketplace. Buy and sell notes online at notemarketplace.com. And by Building Block CRE. Manage contacts, properties, listings, and more at blockcre.com.
Do more business with your biggest clients. Techniques Marketing has perfected exciting new ways to increase your revenue with all your key accounts, way beyond mere trial and error. And we've done it for some of the biggest companies in America. Look, if you're happy with your numbers, great. If not, let's talk. Visit TechniquesMarketing.com. T-E-C-H, that's the tech. N-I-Q-U-E-S, there you've got your neeks. TechniquesMarketing.com.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces, or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site, PopUpInsider.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio or send an email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio. Before the break, we were expecting Dan and Ray to tell us funny stories. Or interesting stories, it doesn't have to be funny, about how they were able to assist a broker in convincing their client of perhaps pricing the property properly. Ray, why don't we start with you?
I knew you'd do that, Howard. I didn't realize, okay, regarding a broker, I was just thinking, because as I was sitting there listening, I was thinking of a funny story, and it doesn't necessarily relate directly to the broker.
That's fine. I'll take that.
You'll take that?
I'll take that.
And what I was thinking of is, like, we don't typically do residential appraisal, but we do for some high-priced residential in New York City. And we had sent one of our appraisers over to inspect a very upscale, high-priced condo, $25 million condo,
wow,
in an exclusive building in Manhattan. And they went, two people went, and they went through security. They went up to the floor, to whatever floor it was. The housekeeper let them in. They measured the building. And then he asked, where's the second floor? Because it's a two-level condo. And he said, there is no second floor. And he kind of said, uh-oh. He had the wrong address. The property he should have inspected was across the street.
Oh, gosh.
So that was a little embarrassing. And we got a call from the security later that day, and we confirmed that, yeah, it was our mistake. We went into the wrong building.
Well, consider yourself fortunate that you discovered that before you submitted the appraisal report.
Yeah, that would have been embarrassing, yes.
Yes, it would have.
We would have had to do a location adjustment for that one.
Oh, absolutely. So, Dan, you're on the spot.
Well, I think the most interesting appraisal I ever did was I was with a large national firm, and I'd been in the field for about 2 weeks, and I was actually flying from Florida back to San Diego, and had a holdover in Houston. Got a phone call from one of the regional guys and said, hey, can you be in Costa Rica tomorrow morning at 8 a.m.? And I'm like, you got to be kidding. Turns out that we had a gentleman quit the firm that had six appraisals that he needed to have completed in Costa Rica, and they needed somebody that had international experience to run down there and do the inspection on these properties. So next, you know, I board a plane, I head to Costa Rica, I land. This is like a Quonset hut, you know, backwoods type airport. I get up next morning from the hotel, and have you ever seen the movie The Romancing the Stone?
Oh, yeah.
With Kurt Douglas and Kathleen Turner? Remember the drug lord?
Oh, yeah.
Well, the drug lord from that show drove up in his Jeep to pick me up for these property inspections. And I'm getting in the car, and I'm thinking to myself, if this guy gets mad, they'll never find the body. I mean, I'm down. My family knows where I'm at. No one else except for one person in Houston knows I'm down here. And I spent the entire day running around the countryside with this guy that spoke broken English, saying yes to everything he said, because I was just, my whole goal in life was to get back to the airport and get back to the U.S. So that was probably one of the more interesting experiences I've had as an appraiser.
So would you say that you appraised the situation properly or apprised it properly?
I was just trying to survive the next day.
Now, that's a smart appraiser. Now, who actually hires an appraiser? Dan, why don't we start with you, since we just finished with that great Romancing the Stone story.
Well, it's diverse. One report that we ran showed about 50% of the assignments come from sort of the banking world and so forth. But we also have about 15% come from law offices, 13% from sort of private industry individuals, 8% from government, and about 6% from the accounting world and from the C-suite. And what we're seeing in our industry is a expansion through the valuation for financial reporting of more assignments, more coming from the C-suite level and from the accounting world. But the vast majority, over half of our assignments, typically come from the financial world, from banking.
Well, Ray, who is it, the buyer or the seller in a sale transaction? Is it the buyer or seller who hires the appraiser, or neither one of them?
You know, it could be either one. You know, sometimes it's a seller who wants to get an idea as to what their expectations are. Other times it's the buyer, and we do a lot of work with pension funds. And the pension funds a lot of times require an appraisal to support the purchase price, so that they want to make sure that they can go back to their constituents and show that they're not paying, you know, above market for a particular property. So it's pretty typical that it could come from either end.
Paul, are there any legal limitations on who can hire an appraiser in a sale transaction?
Not that I'm aware of. The one big legal limitation is that the appraisal has to be objectively prepared, and that it can't be misleading, obviously, and based on any kind of conditions that aren't necessarily going to occur, or hypothetical conditions that are unlikely or remote possibilities. So really, anybody can hire appraisers, provided their expectations are not for a specific value conclusion. And also, appraisers can't be paid based upon the outcome of the appraisal report, so they can't be paid or bonused based upon the value conclusion that they come up with. So they really have to have a fee ahead of time and stick to that fee and provide their opinion objectively.
Oh, so you don't get a...
Howard?
Sure.
I'm sorry, Howard, it's Ray. I was just going to say that's all true, but one thing is what the listener should be aware of is that with bank, if you're going to go for a bank loan, the bank has to hire the appraiser, so it can't be like the borrower hiring the appraiser. So there's banking regulations that require the banks to hire, and there's other limitations too. If there's a litigation assignment, typically you've got to be hired by the law firm directly so that you can maintain client privilege. There are some concerns. You know, if you could hire, like Paul said, that's accurate. Anybody could hire any appraiser, but under certain circumstances, the appraisal may not be used for the purposes that it was intended.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, particularly the attorney-client privilege, something that I would be sensitive to. Stay with us. More to come with our guests on commercial appraisal right here on CRE Radio.
CRE Radio is supported by the National Retail Tenants Association. Learn more at retailtenants.org. By the Institute of Real Estate Management, supporting you at every stage of your career. And by Tactics, the magazine for shopping center marketing directors. Visit tacticsmagazine.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promo code Howard. Visit ProspectNow.com. How about now? While you're thinking about it.
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Block CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Block CRE is the dead simple, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Block CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
If you have questions or a point you'd like to make during the live show, call in at 619-393-6492. Press 1 to be placed in queue to speak live to Howard and his guests. That's 619-393-6492 during the live show. Then press 1 to be placed in queue.
We are back. Today's program, Best Practices, Finding the Right Commercial Appraisal Flurm. Let's try that again. That sounds more like flan. You said Costa Rica, so I started thinking of flan. Glad to have you with us, gentlemen. When a broker gets an appraisal report, what should the broker do with it? Dan, why don't we start with you?
I think, you know, I've always counseled brokers just that when a review appraisals, you know, you sort of skim the front half of the appraisal, which is fairly straightforward. You want to review the physical aspects, the site and the improvement section to really make sure that the appraiser's gotten it right. And then you want to read every word of the highest and best use section and the valuation sections towards the latter half of the appraisal. And really make sure that they've got the analysis right and that they've got a good selection and a handle on the comps. Really looking for catchphrases. To me, a sign of a poor appraisal is where you pick up statements like market participants said, or, you know, our opinion confirmed by public records, you know, and when you start seeing CoStar in the photo, you know something's wrong. And so I think a lot of it is really going through the appraisal and giving it sort of the smell test as to reality, you know, whether or not they really understand the market, they understand the product. You know, this is one of the areas that we see as some of the biggest weaknesses within our industry is what I call the bubble appraiser. So I think it's really reading through the appraisal to try to understand how competent they are, how good a job they did as far as verifying their data, and how close they are to the really street knowledge as far as how these things are being.
Ray, how should the broker comment, if at all? Should the broker comment to their client about the appraiser? I mean, where does it all of a sudden start separating from being a broker and then starting to get involved in the actual appraisal itself?
There's been some brokers known to get involved in appraisals, just like we all have clients that like to get involved in appraisals. So, you know, you deal with it, you listen to what the feedback is just with any client. And if they have some good comments, like a lot of good commercial brokers know their particular market. And if you're doing an appraisal, if you didn't hit, just like Dan had said, if you didn't hit the right comps or miss something, I think the broker's going to let you know. And you know, the appraiser is, you know, has to take that information back, review it, and see whether or not there's validity in changing anything in the report.
Ray, I'm going to ask you for your comments in a moment. But before I do, I want Dan and I'm getting everybody confused now. Paul, I'm going to ask you for your comments. And before I do, I'm going to ask Dan and Ray to think about situations or stories that they can tell about brokers who handled things really well in their comments, the really good brokers, and those who perhaps delved into areas they shouldn't have. So what are your thoughts? Let me get myself correct here. I got Dan, I've got Ray, and I've got Paul.
Paul. You got Paul.
I got Paul.
Well, I think Dan and Ray, in answering their question previously, really identified all the areas that brokers can get involved and how they should get involved in reviewing appraisal reports. What I would add to that is what if I'm reviewing a report, I want to learn something. And that can be a really good test for a broker when they read an appraisal report. Did they learn something about the market or the property that they didn't know? And if an appraiser is really doing a thorough job, they're going to learn something, whether it's about the physical condition of the property and how that may meet a certain market demand, or it's about other uses that the property could be applied to that maybe they weren't aware of. They weren't aware that it was permitted in zoning, and they might not have been aware that there was an economic driver for a particular use in the marketplace. So I look to brokers when we supply them with our appraisal reports to come back to me with comments, objections, and maybe even an argument or two about why a conclusion in my report is either they view as being incorrect, incomplete, or unsupported, because it makes us better appraisers. And if we've done our job right, we should be able to persuade the broker that that our conclusion is well supported and can be valuable to them in their relationship with their client.
Dan, see, this time I'm going to pick you first. A story of a best case situation in which a broker handled the appraisal report correctly, or a worst case, either one.
Oh, I think, Paul and Ray touched on it. Our job is to reflect the market and to reflect those that are directly participating in the transactions. And, the brokers, buyers, and sellers are typically the closest people to the deal. And they know their properties the best. They know the market's probably better than we do. And getting data and information from them is absolutely necessary for our putting out a good product. I'm the only guy here that actually is embedded within a brokerage firm. And I mean, we've had situations where we've killed our own deals. We had a situation just here recently in Chicago that we did the appraisal on a property that the broker had under contract, and we just could not get there. We just, our job, as my old mentor Matt Marshall would say, is to tell the truth. And if we can't support it and we can't show that it's what the market values the asset at, we can't put that number down. And we killed a deal. And it was nice because, frankly, we had the broker came back afterwards and said, yeah, I understood. I know we were shooting for the moon, but, I've got to advocate for my client. And that's just as Ray pointed out. Their job is to advocate for their client. Our job is to be that third-party consumer protection function that just speaks truth, and the numbers are what the numbers are. And so we've had that situation where we've bumped heads with the brokers on properties. My standard response is that, hey, obviously we're really good looking, but we're not divine. And if you can come back with data that shows us where we've made a mistake or where we've missed the mark, we'll certainly consider it and incorporate it where appropriate. And honestly, very rarely do I ever get anybody to take me up on that challenge.
When we come back, we're going to take a break right now. But when we come back, we're either going to hear a very entertaining story from Ray, or We're going to go directly into problems and issues in appraisal. So, Ray, you've got an opportunity to think of a really fun story. I'm sure, and as long as you've been in the business, that you can come up with a fun story.
All right. Thank you, Alan.
CRE Radio is supported by Prospect Now. Locate building owner principals faster and smarter at prospectnow.com. By The Broker List. Find brokers, deals, services, and vendors free online at thebrokerlist.com. And by Techniques Marketing. Grow your key account revenues at techniquesmarketing.com.
If you're a retail tenant, you really should belong to the NRTA. They're an organization of the tenants, by the tenants, and for the tenants. Whether you manage a large portfolio or just a mom and pop, the National Retail Tenants Association is on your side. NRTA exists to protect retail tenants everywhere and to make sure landlord billings are correct. Don't wait for your next statement of CAM charges to arrive. Log on to retailtenants.org. That's retailtenants.org. Find out more today. If you need anything with your company logo on it, you need Monogram Magic. T-shirts, ball caps, polo shirts, anything. Monogram Magic does it beautifully, does it right, and does it right on time. For over 20 years, Monogram Magic has produced corporate apparel your people will be proud to wear. Large orders or small, it's all about attention to detail. See for yourself. Here's the website, logostolife.com. That's L-O-G-O-S, the number 2, then L-I-F-E.com, logostolife.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to at creradio or email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to our conversation about commercial appraiser with Paul Beiser, Dan Boring, and Ray Sears. We were in the process of putting Ray on the spot. I love doing that. So, Ray, do you have a story for us, or do we go right into the problems and issues in appraisals?
No, I thought of a instance where we had a broker challenging one of our appraisals, and what we were doing was a large portfolio of apartment buildings located all over the country, and there was one particular property that they were looking at, and the client required us to do the discounted cash flow analysis. And they were critical. We were having a conference call, and they were saying, hey, you know what? You're much too conservative with your rental growth in this projection. And we're saying, no, we thought it was reasonable. And they said, no, you're much too conservative. The rents are going to go up much faster than that. And then we told them, don't you know that there's restrictive rent control in that municipality? And there was dead silence on the other side. So that's why it's real important that the appraiser knows the local lay of the land, and what factors might influence the value locally.
Oh, that's scary. That's scary, and it didn't really make the broker look particularly good, but it certainly made you look good. That's a good story. I like that one. Let's talk about problems and issues in appraisals. We previously had discussed a lack of credibility and connectivity as to what is really going on in the market. Do appraisers have that problem, or do the brokers have that problem? Dan, why don't we start with you?
Well, if I say anything that offends anybody, my name's Ray.
Let me interrupt you a second. Before the show started, I told each of the guests that if you're going to say something that people aren't going to like, you use someone else's name. So you guess who it is. I'm getting confused now. I think it was Dan, but I can't say for certain. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a number. In my personal opinion, there are a number of issues in our industry. A lot of it has to do with younger appraisers with less experience coming into the market. I remember I had one guy working for me, just a great young man, but just lack of experience. And we were out doing an industrial property, and He drafted his appraisal, brought it to me for review, and I looked at it, and boy, it was just not passing the smell test. And I looked at him, and I said, John, you know, is this really the right number? Oh, yes, Mr. Boring, that's the right number. I said, John, if you had to pull out your checkbook tomorrow and write a check for this property, is this what you would pay for this property? He goes, oh, hell no. I said, John, and, you know, the light came on, and he went back and redid the analysis. But a lot of it is we're dealing with a lot of younger people who just don't have the experience. And what happens is, you know, the appraisers are under such time constraint pressures and whatnot that they end up sort of doing appraisals on the fly. I think a big part of our industry is somewhat appraising what I call appraising within the bubble. They're, you know, over-reliance on CoStar and LoopNet and the Internet. I had one client tell me that he had one appraiser that turned in a property and talked about the property and said there was nothing going on around it. And when the client went out to the site, he looked right across the street, and the major competitor was building a project, you know, kitty quarter right across the street from the subject property. And it was obvious the appraiser had not even gone out to the site, and we call that, you know, Google Maps appraising. So I think that it's that. I think our industry, because of this over-reliance on LoopNet and CoStar, we get what's called a whiplash effect. You know, by the time a meeting of the minds on a property transaction occurs and the property goes through due diligence and then goes to closing, you know, there might be anywhere from a 3 to 6 month delay. And then after closing, it gets reported into CoStar and so forth. So some of that data, by the time the appraiser sees it, might be 10 to 12 months old. And this happens, it's reflected where we see in an improving market we're under appraising, and within a decreasing market we're over appraising, because we're faced with this sort of whiplash effect on the timeliness of data.
Now, Paul,
you know, let me interrupt
you a second. Paul, is there really an over reliance on CoStar and LoopNet?
Well, I certainly agree with Dan. I've seen that as issues in appraisals here in New Jersey, and I think they're both useful tools, in that they can give appraisers leads on transactions that may or may not have occurred, and then it's incumbent upon the appraiser to go out and really ferret out that information, verify it, and just, you know, see if it's really reliable, and then how to go about analyzing it. Dan also touched on a good point, too, about younger appraisers coming into the business. That's a big and important role for firms like ours and for us as managers of those firms, is we've got to make sure we have proper training in place and work with the younger appraisers so that they can understand what makes a good appraisal, what kind of analysis is necessary, what kind of data gathering is necessary, and what kinds of questions you should be asking yourself about a property when you're going out and appraising it. And Ray's office, I know, does an excellent job of educating their new staff and their experienced staff. So keeping up with continuing education, training young employees, it's very important and really adds a lot of credibility to our industry when it's done properly.
Right. If you can, talk a little bit about the training that you provide.
What we do is we have web-based training, but also once a year we have a training session for appraisers in Las Vegas, which isn't too bad to take. And we bring in about 200 people from the company, and we have a series of different courses and speakers. One year we had like a bankruptcy attorney, a bankruptcy judge explaining about the bankruptcy process so that we understand more how the appraisal process works within it. We've had brokers come in, talk to us. We've had courses on Argus, on how to prepare, you know, the software programs and how to run the programs, our proprietary programs. So every year we've been doing this for, I think it's our 12th year that we've been doing it. So it's good because it keeps everybody fresh. It gets young people up to speed that are young trainees, and it also helps the older us older guys keep on the cutting edge as well.
Oh, I the training is just so very important and real practical training. Before we continue on, I'd like to hear a few words from the good people who pay the bills around here. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about familiarity with the market, whether how important that is, and the different categories that appraisers should be paying attention to.
CRE Radio is supported by Monogram Magic. For the best in corporate apparel, visit logostolife.com. Buy Note Marketplace. Buy and sell notes online at notemarketplace.com. And by Building Block CRE. Manage contacts, properties, listings, and more at blockscre.com.
The Institute of Real Estate Management believes good management matters and that well-managed properties pay big dividends. Hiram delivers the power of knowledge and recognizes the importance of sharing it. Hiram serves real estate professionals who manage all property types. They're dedicated to delivering cutting-edge networking and educational opportunities for every stage of your career. How can Hiram help you? To count the ways, log on to Hiram Orange County, that's IREMOC.org. Learn more today.
What's next for commercial real estate and retail marketing? Pop-up retail, and it's here now. PopUpInsider.com is the premier online resource for owners to advertise and fill properties for temporary use. PopUpInsider.com is where merchants and brands shop for temporary locations. See for yourself. Go to PopUpInsider.com, create your own account, market your empty spaces, or view available locations for your business, all on one convenient site. PopUpInsider.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CREradio or email to questions@creradio.com.
We're speaking with today's very special guest, Dan Boring, Ray Sears, and Paul Beiser. I just realized, Ray, that I didn't give you an opportunity to express what you feel are the biggest issues and problems in appraisal today.
I guess Dan and also Paul touched upon those areas of the training that's very important. And we did talk a little bit about services that are available, like CoStar and LoopNet. And one thing that's changed is there's a lot of transparency. So there's a lot of information out there, but it's not necessarily all accurate information. So I know Paul does a lot of litigation, and for litigation, if you ever just accepted CoStar information and went to court, you would be eaten up. So you would have to have primary verification, not secondary verification, for any kind of comparables that you might be using.
Why don't you explain by what you mean by primary versus secondary information?
Sure. Something like CoStar, reporting what the sale is, that's secondary verification. So that's coming from a third-party source. And it could be accurate or it may not necessarily be accurate. Versus primary is where the appraisers, personally done the confirmation themselves. They might have talked to the attorney, the broker, one of the parties in the transaction. Hopefully they would have a copy of the deed, closing statement. If it was a lease, a copy of the lease itself to help support the data that's showing that it is accurate.
Well, this is a very important point. When we were talking a few weeks back, this point was made that this is not just raw data. That the appraiser actually goes in and investigates what other things may have affected the sale price that may be relevant. Paul, what is your experience in that respect?
Well, knowing a transaction, whether it's a sale or a lease or any other kind of transaction, is vital to what we do as appraisers, and particularly, as Ray mentioned, if you're going to do any kind of expert testimony or litigation. The witness box in a courtroom is a very lonely place. The appraisers don't get to ask any questions. They don't get to expand on their answers unless it was in direct answer to a question. And it can be humiliating. And if an appraiser, when pressed about his knowledge of a transaction, can't answer from firsthand perspective, then you're in for a long afternoon, and it's a tough afternoon. It's not an easy place to sit. So you only need to go through that experience once to realize that, one, you better come prepared, and two, it can be humiliating if you don't know all of the answers. So that drives us in our office to really spend a lot of time on verification and understanding every element that went into a transaction. Now, there are limits to what you can understand and what information people are willing to share, but sometimes you just have to throw out a piece of data if you can't explain it fully.
One of my favorite questions to ask an expert: have you considered? Because, well, I mean, it's a terrible question to receive, because if you didn't consider it, the implication is you should have.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, that's not necessarily true.
I think the best answer to that question is yes or no. And you can't make up the question, so you just have to wait for the next one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, in understanding the market, are there subparts to each of the market that you should be familiar with, such as the size of the space? And, for example, in a small market, a small geographical market, there might be one regional shopping center. Should you be asking a local appraiser to appraise that one regional market, that one regional shopping center, or should you be looking for someone who's more familiar with regional shopping centers? Ray, why don't I ask you that question?
Yeah, well, all licensed appraisers come under USPAP, which are the government requirements, and a requirement is that you have to have competency in a particular area. So if I've never appraised an atomic power plant, I better not take one on unless I know what the heck I'm doing. So you have to go out there, get the expertise, or get someone to assist you that has expertise in that particular area to ensure that the public is getting a reliable valuation. So if I were to take on something like that, a regional mall, like the only regional mall in a local area, and I've never appraised one before, I'd be having some problems with meeting the requirements of USPAP. So that's why you really have to have expertise for that particular property. And so properties, most of the time it's a local market for a particular property. If it's an office building in a downtown, the competition is the other office buildings. But if you have the only regional mall in a particular metropolitan area, the competition for that regional mall is really other regional malls in similar locations throughout the country. So it becomes more of a regional or a national market for that particular type of property. So the appraiser's got to be careful to understand what is the competitive market for that particular property. Most of the time it's local, but it can be regional, and it also could be national.
Well, mm-hmm. Dan, do appraisers team up together? Because I know lawyers do. Sometimes we go, well, I'm handling, the overall aspect of the case, but I need a specialist in this area to advise. Do appraisers do that?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And that's one of the things that I've always enjoyed in my career in working with larger firms, is being able to reach out and find those people that have unique expertise. I remember one time we were bidding on – we got a request to appraise a military Navy base on Guam. And, of course, we went in and bid it and everything, but it was amazing. I put out an email to our firm, and it was amazing the number of people that came back and said, oh, yeah, we did the New York Harbor, we did San Diego, we did the military facilities in Florida. So, appraisers are very quick to look for help and to look for expertise and to team up together, and it's a very collaborative relationship.
Well, you're listening to CRE Radio. We'll return after this short break.
CRE Radio is supported by the National Retail Tenants Association. Learn more at retailtenants.org. By the Institute of Real Estate Management, supporting you at every stage of your career. And by Tactics, the magazine for shopping center marketing directors. Visit tacticsmagazine.com.
Attention commercial real estate brokers and professionals. Have you ever struggled to find the true ownership behind a commercial property? What about finding the phone number, email, and name of the actual decision maker? ProspectNow.com tracks this information on more than 10 million commercial and multifamily properties nationwide. Howard's listeners are invited to a 3-day free trial. Simply go to ProspectNow.com and enter the promo code Howard. Visit ProspectNow.com. How about now, while you're thinking about it?
Commercial brokers spend more time selling and less time organizing with Building Blocks CRE. Built by brokers for brokers, Building Blocks CRE is the dead symbol, best business organizer out there. Set up and learn in minutes. Track deals, contacts, listings, and more. Easier than ever before. Right now, save 10% when you visit blockcre.com. Use promo code Howard. Remember, Building Blocks CRE. Easy to learn, easy to use. See for yourself. Log on to blockcre.com.
For questions, feedback, or to suggest a topic, here's how to reach us. Click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @creradio or send an email to questions@creradio.com.
Welcome back to CRE Radio with our very special guests. Dan Boring from Lee & Associates Valuation and Consulting, Paul Beiser from Value Research Group, and Ray Sears from Integra Realty Resources. What effect does green buildings and sustainability have on appraisals? Dan, why don't you start?
Well, it's a evolving market. It's new. I think that the potential benefits are we're starting to see incentives within the lending capital stack for green buildings, preferred financing, obviously lower costs in maintenance and operating and capital reserves. We're also seeing value recognition for the green facilities having quicker absorptions, better tenant retention, less downtime between leases, possibly lower TIs. So we're starting to see those effects. On the negative side, we're seeing a lack of really supportable data with which, how that affects the NOI and the ROI. But we are starting to see more examples. For example, the Empire State Building and some others where they're really being able to codify the cost savings in regards to green, and that's really starting to make an impact in the market. So it's a maturing sector of the market, and I think that as more data is gathered and there's a greater direct correlation between income and expense and the green modifications and their payback, then it's going to become more and more of a standard with our industry.
Well, Ray, can you, in the present, include considerations of sustainability in your appraisal?
Well, as Dan said, it's evolving. So you have to look at how the market perceives those changes. So we've got one large institutional client that really will only buy LEED certified buildings. And they claim that they'll pay a good 25 basis points premium on a cap rate for something like that. We've got other clients that tell us it has no material impact currently. But as it evolves, I think what's going to happen is the definition of a Class A, say, office building is going to be that it has some types of LEED certification. And so just as a Class A building, like Dan had said, they have maybe lower reserves, a higher tenant retention. There's some Fortune 100 companies that have requirements that future leasing has to have.
some types of LEED certification. So it's subtle. It's very subtle. It's hard to put your finger on it. It's developing, and I think it's going to be changing what the definition of a Class A office product is going to be in the future.
Well, Paul, when do you think that it's going to be not so subtle?
I think it's getting there now. This LEED certification, and for those who don't know, it means leadership in energy and environmental design. It's from the U.S. Green Buildings Council, and these programs have been in place for, I guess, close to 10 years now, but they've really gained some traction here in New Jersey. We'll look at office buildings, and the rental differences are stark between LEED certified buildings and those that are not. Even for buildings that were constructed around the same period of time, if one owner decided to make capital improvements to bring their building up to a LEED Gold, that building becomes much more marketable. And as Ray had mentioned, there are many tenants now that have a requirement that they must move into space that has a minimum of a LEED Silver designation. And that's kind of trickled into financing, too. It's much easier now to get transactional financing for LEED buildings than for those that aren't. And I think the same is true in pension fund acquisitions and REIT acquisitions. LEED buildings are really what's in demand now. So I think in the next year or two, there's going to be a real striation in the market between buildings that are LEED certified and those that aren't. And if you're left holding on to a building that is not LEED certified and hasn't done anything to green itself up, they're going to be really the C-class properties in a market. And there will be a lot of analysis made as to whether it makes sense to raise the building up to a LEED standard or change the property to another use, because I just don't think office buildings that aren't LEED certified are going to be marketable in the next couple of years.
If you have the chance, we did a show about a month ago where we had some incredible guests talking about LEED certification and GRESB. I don't know if any of you are familiar with GRESB, which really relates to institutional investors and the valuation. It's basically, they're very much in the business of gathering data and information so that people can determine whether or not, as Dan had mentioned, codification. Whether or not you can actually determine whether or not a LEED certified building will cost more, will deliver more, et cetera. Let's go to the final.
Howard, this is.
Go ahead.
Howard, this is Dan. Just one more comment. I think, market value is equal to what the market values. And so, especially with LEED, and Ray and Paul, you may want to comment. I think it's very geography oriented. If you're in New York or you're in one of the major cities, it's a high priority. If you're in Ponca City, Oklahoma, probably not so. So it's where the appraiser really has to understand not only the motivation for LEED, but how it's reflected within that local marketplace.
Now, that's interesting, Dan, because as you say, in Oklahoma, do you think that's because they're not as attuned or tuned into the LEED requirements or the LEED classifications, or is it because there's so little building of new offices that there really aren't any competing LEED properties?
I think that's exactly it, and I think that, like within your New York market, it's become a standard for a Class A building. So therefore, the competition has motivated the construction in Ponca. If you mow your lawn, that's a Class A building. So it's really it's a function of what the competitive market requires to attract the top tenants.
Gotcha.
Good points, gentlemen. What is the most important thing that a listener to this show should take away? Ray, why don't we start with you?
Well, not all appraisal requirements are the same. If you have a need for an appraisal, it really depends
on what that particular need is. Is it litigation? Is it for financing? Is it for a sale? So there's all different reasons for the appraisal services. And then it's important to match up the proper appraiser to the appraisal requirement. And you certainly want to make sure that you get an appraiser that knows your particular market. So it's very important. If it's a hotel, you want somebody who's appraised a lot of hotels and knows what they're doing. If it's litigation, you don't want somebody who's it's the first time they're going to be testifying. So you want someone who's very seasoned. So I think it really there's a lot of different needs for appraisal services, and you really have to match up that need to the particular appraiser. Make sure that the appraiser knows his stuff, his or her stuff, very knowledgeable about their particular market, so that they can provide a creditable valuation result.
Paul, what's the most important thing that someone should take away from this show?
Well, I think to view appraisers as problem solvers. Generally, if we're involved and an appraisal is needed, there's a particular problem that needs to be solved. And it needs to be solved with clarity and with expansive data and analysis. And just keep in mind that appraisers really provide a vital function to the U.S. economy. So much of the economy is based on the performance of the real estate markets. And appraisers assist in providing the information and kind of the financial backbone for decisions made on a national economic platform. So view us as problem solvers, because that's the best of us. That's what we do. And we'll spend a lot of time asking questions of why you need an appraisal, what function it's going to serve, and who is going to read this appraisal and rely on it to make decisions. And if you get those kinds of questions asked when you call for an appraiser, then you've probably found a good one.
Dan, what's the most important takeaway?
I think that it's you know, our job is to tell the truth. And our job is to what the market is telling us, how it values the asset. And so, you know, looking for an appraiser who is well knowledgeable about the market and the property, helping by supplying them with all relevant data, making sure that they don't miss anything, and really approaching it from a collaborative effect can really help the user in gaining good appraisal services.
Good thoughts by all three of you. Today's show marks our last live radio show for 2013. When we come back in 2014, we've got quite a few exciting things on tap. We've got a show on current bankruptcy matters that affect commercial real estate. We're going to be doing a show with a guest in Calgary, an architect who's got some award-winning designs. We've got quite a few interesting things coming on, including live television. We're expanding into live television from radio, and we'll have both available, in most cases, doing simulcasting. So, gentlemen, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you. Really good show. Really good show. You all three were great. I really enjoyed it. Dan, thank you very much. Ray and Paul, got everybody in
yep.
there. Now, how will someone get in touch with you, Ray?
With me, it's easy. Our website is www.irr.com.
And Paul, what about you?
Same thing. Our website is www.valueresearch.com, or just look me up, BEISSER, on LinkedIn.
And Dan.
www.lee-associates.com.
Gentlemen, I really would like to thank you again. I want you all to have a wonderful holiday season, healthy, 2014 is going to be a great year for all of us. And to all my listeners, I'd like to thank you for joining us here on CRE Radio.
Please listen again next time to CRE Radio with Howard Klein. Every live and recorded broadcast is accessible on your desktop, tablet, or smartphone at creradio.com or in iTunes, just search for CRE Radio. Here's how to reach us with your questions, feedback, and show topics you'd like to hear about. On our website, click the comment button on any show page at creradio.com. On Twitter, send a reply to @CRE Radio. Via email to questions@CREradio.com or call in during the live show at 619-393-6492 and press 1 to be placed in queue. CRE Radio broadcasts are presented on an informational basis only, with the intent of engaging, educating, and entertaining our listeners. Howard and his guests' conversations specifically do not offer legal advice. If you need legal advice, please consult your own attorney. Portions of the show may have been pre-recorded. Unauthorized editing or copying of the show without the express written consent of CRE Radio is strictly prohibited. All rights reserved.
And that's a wrap.